to order. The time is 4:50. Today is May 4th, Wednesday. Today we'd like to take up House Bill 280, House Bill 283, and Senate Bill 158 in that order. And then we may pick up some others if we have time. So House Bill 280, Jim Pound, here. If you could introduce the bill and tell us who you are for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Jim Pound, Committee Aide to the House Resources Committee, the sponsor of the House Bill 280. HB 280 is actually a bill that was requested by the mining industry. It imposes a 4-mil property tax on mines located outside of the organized boroughs. The reason for the request is to offer some stability in future taxing systems. For the state, it means an additional source of revenue to provide funding, as it's in the bill, for education until a borough is organized to locate it near one of these mines. Future boroughs would assume the taxing authority and receipts for use in their local needs after they organized. Taxing is limited to large mines. It is protecting those few Alaska mom-and-pop mines we still have in operation. Any restrictions that would be placed on the state's new municipality is limited to 15 years after that full taxing authority is in place. While many mines are based on current projections of only having a life of 15 years, often we find that that life does extend based on new processes, fines, and the price of minerals. Assessments are conducted under the similar guidelines that are currently being imposed by on the oil and gas industry. HB 280 is good for industry and the state, and we urge your support, and I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim, is there a current limit now on what municipalities or boroughs can tax projects in that area?
Through the chair, no, there is not, Representative.
What areas of the state are there mines in currently that they do tax, and would you know what the tax is?
Through the chair, Representative Chenault, Fairbanks North Star Borough would be the Fort Knox mine. They, I believe, it's at the existing mill levy on property.
So that would be at 19 mills or whatever?
I think it's around 14-something at the present time, Representative. The Northwest Arctic Borough taxes Red Dog on a severance tax based on mineral production, which I believe is around 3%. And the Denali Borough taxes Usabelli, also in the severance tax.
Did you know what effect, if I can, Mr. Chairman, do you know what effect there would be on, I see we have a deal here from Donlin, and I know we have Pebble out there, and we have a couple other big mines that are, you know, I don't know, is Kensington in the Juneau Borough?
Yep.
And would they fall underneath the current tax structure, I wonder, of the municipality of Juneau, or?
Juneau has a two-tier, as I understand, Juneau has a two-tier tax structure. Currently, Greens Creek pays 6.6 mils, and as will Kensington. If the mine were connected to city services, the mill rate increases to 11.
Would that have effect on any, will this bill have any effect on any mines currently operating that are being taxed?
Through the chair, it will not. If they are within an organized borough, if they are a mine operating outside of an organized borough, it would impose a 4-mil levy on personal property.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Is there anything that prevents a borough from annexing a mine in this bill?
Through the chair, Representative Wyrock, there's nothing that prevents them from annexing a mine. But they are required to come in under the existing property tax structure, as they would for any other business that's already within the borough.
So they couldn't have an additional tax that it ties into existing businesses in the community?
Through the chair, that would be a municipal tax. The state tax would go away once the mine is either annexed.
The bill doesn't affect a municipality's tax.
Through the chair, that's correct, Representative Barber.
Okay. Anything else, Representative Barber? Representative Stoltz.
Thank you, Chairman. Mr. Pound, on page 3, on section 43, 67020, can you just discuss that? that language about the 15-year provision?
Through the chair, Representative Stoltz, essentially what it does is for a period of 15 years, the tax language that is in place under AS 4367, which is the new language statute, is restricted to the taxes on the particular taxes listed in this item and this level, except in a situation of where a municipality may come in and do personal property tax on a new one. After the 15-year period, the door opens up that there are no exemptions at all on what can and cannot be taxed.
Mr. Chairman, I haven't followed the gas line provisions as well as a lot of other people in this building, but there have been some constitutional concerns raised about tax regimes limitations proposed in that. How much has this been legally scrutinized, and what kind of ground are we on? Do we have anybody from definitive authority that we can hang their hat on, other than you saying, I don't think so, or I don't know?
Well, the chair, I'll always yield to counsel.
Yeah, we do have Brett Freed, economist with the tax division, as well as Steve Van Sant. I have them on the list here on teleconference. I don't know if they still are. Okay.
Maybe, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Pound can discuss him take a shot at it.
Through the chair, Ms. Stoltz, I was yielding to legal counsel over in our legal, who's the one who wrote this language up based on the information that we provided. As I understand the paragraph, essentially, Section 20, it is prior to it being annexed into a municipality. Essentially, for a period of 15 years, taxes are levied against the items in the list, such as sale and use of minerals, taxes on a measure of gross net income from taxable property, including income for exploration, license fees, excise fees, severance, and throughput. Primarily, these would be unavailable for the first 15 years. It's essentially what we're looking at is basing everything on property tax.
Well, Chairman, I'll wait for some more definitive answers. I think I'd like to hear that those answers. I think there's value and support for not overly taxing the industry in its infancy in the early development stages. Which, I want to make sure that we're on good constitutional ground and that it's not an arbitrary policy.
Through the chair, that is upon commencement date. It's not necessarily. It's upon commencement date of production. It's not based on exploration. And so the 15 years establishes once you start actually pulling the mineral out of the ground.
I'll defer those. We'll ask those again, or somebody will take them and answer them, I guess.
Yeah, and I apologize. We had these guys online at 1:30, so just running a little late today. By the way, for the record, Representative Moses, Representative Holm, Representative Kelly, Foster, Co-Chairman Schnoll, Vice Chairman Stoltz, Representative Hawker, Representative Weirer, and Representative Meyer, Co-Chairman Meyer up here in attendance. Forgot to do that. Okay, Representative Holm, you had a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Pound, I have a problem with this bill, and that it has nothing to do with the structure of the majority of the bill. What I have a problem with is your ability to exempt previous taxing authorities that are in the bill, the grandfathering provisions. I have had a long discussion with Dan Cook, and it's my understanding that that it is appropriate for the state of Alaska to have an even playing field, that if there's a severance tax on minerals in the state of Alaska that are owned by each and every one of us in this room, you cannot take a piece of that and say, well, it's okay for that municipality to tax that industry without the rest of the state getting some benefit from it. And so the grandfathering provision here needs to be looked at, and I'm very, if I could say to you, for example, and I want your comments on this, because, and I don't know if you're not a lawyer, but here's my problem as much as anything. The coal, for example, that we lease to Musa Belli is owned by you and I and everybody in this room. We own the resource. The municipality that's adjacent to that resource does not own the resource. So the state of Alaska, in statute, constitutionally, cannot give... I don't believe we can constitutionally say to that municipality, you can tax that resource. I don't think that's constitutional. Now we're going to get a ruling on that. But because of that, that means though they've been doing these kinds of activities in the past, you can't grandfather them in because they're illegal to begin with. And I'd like your comments on that.
To the Sheriff's Home, I would absolutely agree. It's an unconstitutional issue that's been quite often we pass things or ordinances or statutes in our case that end up being unconstitutional just because, and they seem to kind of go along until such time as a decision is made either by the courts or by this body. And in that case, I would, if it's an unconstitutional situation, I would absolutely agree that, you know, that should be looked into. If it's not a constitutional issue, the grandfather clause, and certainly there's an awful lot of case law on grandfather clauses that would argue
that. Well, I appreciate that.
That point.
Mr. Chairman, through the chair, I don't want to debate it with you. I'm just telling you, we're looking at this right now, and I'm concerned that before this gets passed out, that we solve that constitutional issue because it's very important that no matter what it is, whether it's oil or gas or coal or gold or whatever it is, that we all realize that we own all those resources collectively, not individually, and we can't make those kinds of divisions, I don't believe. So.
Actually, Representative Holm, I think Brett Freed is here. Didn't I see him?
Oh, there he is. Okay. He's with the tax division, and also now Steve Van Sent with the state assessor has joined us. So I don't know which one you'd like to address your question, and Representative Stoltz has a similar
question. Actually, it's a legal question, I believe, rather than an assessment question.
Okay.
So I don't know that it could be solved by either individual, although they both have been involved with those procedures for many years. So you're welcome to try. I don't know.
Brett, since you're here, why don't you come on up?
It's a constitutional issue. The question is what my question is, not one of whether or not you have the authority to tax or not tax. You tax as a state revenue division. You tax collectively over all of us.
Okay. You're welcome to. For the record, tell us who you are, and then if you can answer Representative Holmes' question, great, and then we'll go into Representative Stokes has them. I'm sure you can.
Mine's the same as Mr. Holmes, really.
Okay.
For the record, my name is Brett Freed. I'm an economist with the Department of Revenue. To the chair, Representative Holmes, could you repeat that question? I'm sorry, I just came in late.
Well, my question is more of a statement of what I believe is fact, and that is that the resources of the state of Alaska are owned by all of us collectively, not individually. And constitutionally, the state, we cannot write statutes, I don't believe, that give municipalities to have taxing authority to the exclusion of the rest of the people of the state of Alaska over any resource item. And they've been doing it at Red Dog, they've been doing it, I believe Denali Borough's been doing it at Musa Belli, and maybe there are other places that have been doing it throughout the state, I don't know, but I've only heard of one or two other places where it may be a problem. But I think the question should be asked, and we shouldn't be passing statutes that allow this to continue, nor should we grandfather in something that we've been doing unconstitutionally. And I guess that's what my question is, much as anything.
Mr. Chairman, before you start, maybe I can pile on mine. It's on the provision of the 15 years, and there's been some discussion about similar provisions that related to the gas line relaxing or tax policies. I suspect you guys have talked to lawyers and your experts, and you might just as that. I'm concerned about the 15-year exemption or reduction. We're mandating that far ahead. Just want to know what kind of ground we're on, and from a policy point, and from to your best ability, a legal point.
Yeah, I'm afraid that I'm not qualified to answer that question. It would be better for somebody from I guess from the Department of Law or from Legal Services or something to address that.
Okay. We don't have that person here. Okay, but we can set this aside. If you get some legal assistance, Bill, that would be that'd be great. All right, we can come back to this, Bill, for some time tonight. Yes, but the legal guy's
a lawyer in the house.
We're in order now.
She's an easy to find.
Mm-hmm. All right, official. Okay, we have a gentleman here that claims to be a lawyer.
Most of them.
I have my bar card.
All right. We'll keep this alive then. Go ahead.
Well, for the record, my name is Ethan Falacco, and I work for the Department of Law. And I hesitated to speak to you folks about this issue because I've looked at the issue just briefly, and it sounds like you're going to get a thorough investigation from Ledge Legal. And my initial take on the issue is that, and this is from very brief research, Article 10, I think it's Article 10, Section 2, grants the state very broad authority to delegate taxing authority to the municipalities. And my initial take was that there was not a constitutional issue with that subsection of the statute. Now, I want to insist that it's been a very brief research opportunity for me at this point, but I just wanted to, since I was here and you had the question, I just, from the Department of Law at this point, we haven't found a constitutional issue with it.
Hey, Representative Homer, Representative Stoltz, please follow you.
No, I appreciate it. I think we probably need to dig deeper. I think Ethan used to be our Sergeant Arms in the Senate.
This is correct.
Oh, really? Welcome back.
Thank you.
Representative Homer?
No, that's fine. Thank you. Thanks very much.
Hey, we do have some other folks here to testify on this. Bill, James, who? Bug?
Here.
Okay, please. Tell us again your name and who you're affiliated with.
For the record, my name is James Fugue. I work for Placidome U.S. and I'm the Technical and Permitting Coordinator for the Donlin Creek Joint Venture. I'd like to thank the committee members for this opportunity to testify regarding the bill. The handout that you should have received is a brief description of the ongoing work at the Donlin Creek Project. I know you're all pressed for time, so I won't go into any details, but I'd be happy to answer any questions anyone may have about the project. As you can see, if you look through that handout, if a decision is made to move forward with the development of a mine at Donlin Creek, this will be one of the largest and most complex resource development projects in Alaska. Current estimated capital costs for the project are in excess of $1 billion. A mine at Donlin Creek would employ somewhere in the region of 400 people during operations, pay royalties to the shareholders of Alaska Native Corporations through Chulista Corporation, the mineral estate holder for the deposit, and pay mining license taxes and corporate income taxes to the state. These benefits are in addition to the potential payments proposed under HB 280. One of the biggest uncertainties facing mineral development in the unorganized borough of Alaska, and hence the Donlin Creek Project amongst others, is the lack of any defined tax structure at the local level. This makes it extremely difficult to accurately predict future operating margins and costs when one is developing the complex economic models that must be completed prior to making a $1 billion investment decision such as that we are facing at Donlin Creek. This in turn makes it a lot harder to achieve a positive decision on large investments. HB 280 presents several mechanisms for companies who wish to invest in mine development in Alaska to address these uncertainties. These include formalizing the potential taxation structure and mechanisms for negotiating pulse with either the state or the municipalities should a borough form. While at the same time, it also provides a mechanism for the industry to contribute to the cost of education in their communities, and should a local government be formed at some point, contribute to the cost of funding that local government. We therefore encourage the committee to move this bill forward. Thank you for your time. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Kevin Ritchie, if you ask Ms. Bully.
Thank you. Kevin Ritchie with the Alaska Municipal League. We've had quite a bit of interaction with the sponsors of the bill and the mine companies and so on. What we're really doing, I guess, is representing future municipalities that might form or might be able to form and allowing them to do that. There's been a number of improvements that have occurred to the bill. We've been working a lot with Steve Van Zandt, the state assessor, today. While taking away or regulating taxing authority in any manner is obviously a great concern to municipalities. The comments I wanted to make tonight relate to two specific areas of the bill. Steve Van Zandt may be able to talk more about this, but in Section 2C, which allows a municipality to negotiate a payment in lieu of taxes agreement, however, it goes on to say that this cannot be done if the property is subject to a state contract for payments in lieu of taxes. So that would appear to take away the ability that's granted in other parts of the bill for a municipality to define what it needs to be able to pay for schools that are adequate and roads and police and public safety and so on. So that I would strongly urge you to take a close look at, and it may be that you want to in your discussions eliminate the properties but not if the property is subject to a state contract for payments in lieu of taxes, because normally under the rest of the bill a municipality is able to impose a property tax, but it looks like this provision would prevent it from negotiating a payment in lieu of tax if it didn't have the wherewithal to create a property tax. The second concern is Section 3. And this would add a new, this was added to the CS we got a copy of yesterday. And previously this bill has only impacted the formation of new boroughs because the tax structure was unknown. What Section 3 would do, and I think you've already discussed that, is this would broaden the severance tax issue to all municipalities. And until yesterday, that wasn't part of the bill. We have not had an ability to get to our municipalities just to let them know that this was an issue. So from that standpoint, I think it would be good to modify or eliminate that provision for now to let municipalities have a chance to talk about, the constitutionality certainly, but whether that's an important thing or not for municipalities. At this point, as far as I know, on minerals, valuable minerals, I don't think that there's a current severance tax, and I think somebody has testified to that extent. Anyway, with that, I'd be happy to answer questions.
Okay, very good. Any questions? None. Thank you, Kevin. Okay, on teleconference, looks like we have Steve Vincent. Did he want to testify or is he for questions? We'll find out. Steve?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Steve Van Zandt, State Assessor with the Department of Commerce. And basically, I'm here to answer any questions that the committee may answer.
All right. Thank you very much. Stay online in case there are some questions. Steve Borough. Commerce now. Steve Borough with the last hunters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Steve Borough. I'm the Executive Director of Alaska Miners Association, and I'm testifying on behalf of the association. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this bill. This is a unique situation when an industry is volunteering to pay a new tax. Through House Bill 280, the mining industry is volunteering to pay a new property tax that does not currently exist. That tax would be a property tax on large mines operating in the unorganized borough, and would have a constant rate for a period of 15 years from the first production at the mine. The industry already pays several taxes to the state depending on the type of land where the mining occurs. A mining license tax is paid to the state irregardless of whether the mine is on state, federal, or private native or other private land. Mining also pays corporate income tax, mining claim rentals on both state and federal claims, and a production royalty when mining occurs on state-owned land. And when mines are in an organized borough, they pay property taxes. However, In the unorganized borough, there is no municipal government with taxing authority. It is in these areas of the state that we are proposing a new tax. We are proposing a tax of 4 mils. This tax would be paid to the state until such time as a borough is established. If a borough is established at some later date, the tax would then be paid directly to the borough. The mining industry often states that uncertainty is a major concern. The uncertainty typically takes one of three forms: price uncertainty, for which we have absolutely no control, regulatory uncertainty, and tax uncertainty. This new tax would help remove the tax uncertainty part of that scenario. As I'm sure you're aware, this is a work in progress. Extensive testimony has been addressing this in the Senate companion bill, the SB 179, by the state assessor, Alaska Municipal League, and others. Given the very short time remaining in this session, we urge you to pass this bill out of the committee as soon as possible. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Questions?
Not a Steve Burrell. I'd like to talk Steve to Steve and Zan.
Okay. We'll hold it.
Yeah, maybe I had a question, too, with Mr. Van.
Okay. We do have Catherine Kirks, the attorney with Legislative Affairs, online, too. So if you have additional questions for legal staff. Let's see. I think that's everyone who had requested to testify. And we have an amendment. Let's go to questions first. President Schnell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Steve Van Zandt, could you maybe run us through a little bit on 4356 lands? Is there any correlation between that and the tax that we're talking about putting on the mining industry now? And, you know, how would that work? I think somebody else was talking a little bit earlier about how does that really work even in municipalities. I know the Kenai area, I think, is around 12 or 13 mils that we take out of 20 mil 4356 properties. I think Fairbanks is up around 17 to 19. I think Valdez is the same, and so is the North Slope. But I'm just curious as how this applies, or, you know, I guess what kind of structure it is. How does it apply, the 4% to, I know municipalities are unorganized boroughs, but maybe you can explain that a little bit.
Representing Stoll through the chair, if I might, 4356 properties assessed by the state as a centrally assessed property, primarily because it crosses jurisdictional lines between communities. The state levies a 20 mil tax against all oil and gas property in the state. And then the portions that go through existing municipalities are the boroughs levy their mill rate, whatever it may be, against that 20 mils. The oil company will not pay more than 20 mils on any of that valuation. So in that case, it's what we call centrally assessed property because it does cross jurisdictional lines. In this case, what we're looking at is property which is contained within certain boundaries and therefore don't cross jurisdictional lines, but the state would retain authority to assess a tax to the mining companies. So in some manners it is similar to the 4356 property, but in others it's different. We would assess the 4 mils would come directly to the state unless a municipality is formed, and then at that time, a municipality would be free to tax it like they do other property.
And Steve, could you tell me how you would value that 4 mils? How, you know, is that done on essays or how would you value what that particular piece of property, let's say Donlin Creek, was worth as far as the 4 mils?
Representative Stoltz, through the chair. This bill would require us to value the property based on the cost approach, which is one of the three approaches that we would use anyway. And it goes basically on actual cost, which is very similar to the way we've valued the Red Dog mine up in the Northwest Arctic Borough. we use the same type of approach to that. And in one sense, that's what the state uses with 4356 property, although they do consider the other approaches to value, the market approach and the income approach. So we would use the cost approach according to this bill.
We can cut that out.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Steve.
Okay, before we go on to the next question, is Catherine Kurtz here?
Yes.
You're online. Okay.
Good. Yes, I am.
We weren't sure if you were here or online. I think there's still some pending questions that we have for legal. Representative Stoltz? Or Representative Holmes?
I'll go ahead and... Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I haven't used up all my questions yet.
No. Okay.
Ms. Kurtz, on the provision that provides for the 15-year vacation or just the ones comments on some of the possible legal concerns. It just strikes me that there were some discussions on that type of tax policy on the gas line, and we're setting precedents by passing an earlier bill before we addressing that issue. I just I want to make sure that what kind of ground we're on and what paths we might be plowing here.
In terms of the state being the exclusive taxing authority for the 15-year period?
And Ms. Chairman, and limiting it to a certain taxation level for a 15-year period as well.
And the question is?
I don't know.
The
question is: Are there any legal or constitutional concerns? Any red flags jumping out in front of you? I mean, you're the people that we pay to answer some of these questions we come up.
Yeah. With. Well, the state does have the power of taxation. The state is not to suspend or contract that power away under the Constitution, except as otherwise provided. In Article 9, the state certainly does have the authority to set a tax rate. As far as being locked in, I'm not sure I've got that part of your question.
Mr. Chairman, are there any potential problems with locking us into that? As far as constitutional issues that might be raised? I haven't been following the. It just seems like this issue has come up on the gas line when we've been talking about tax policies.
Right, and I'm terribly sorry that I can't address the gas line issues.
And I'm not asking you, it just brings it up. Are we perhaps setting a precedence with this? And we've done it here, and if you know, should this bill pass? And I guess. I'm not very artful in asking my questions.
I can tell you this, that this bill does give the state the power to negotiate payments in lieu of taxes. And the provision you were referring to, 4367.020, that make the tax in place of a municipal tax does not cause me a great deal of legal concern because the state gives taxing authority to municipalities and it defines the scope of that taxing authority. The payments in lieu of tax provision is a potential constitutional issue insofar as it may raise some concerns about whether doing that is a surrender of the taxing power of the state. Which would be unconstitutional if it is.
Uh,
Representative Hall might be.
Maybe I could tie in this. Talking about giving away this taxing authority of the state. Does the state, do you believe, have a right to take the minerals that are owned by all of us and to give away the taxing authority on those minerals, the severance taxing authority, constitutionally to municipalities?
I think, well, that's a good question. You're asking whether the state has authority to give municipalities the power to impose a severance tax, yes?
That is correct. I mean, under the reasoning that the resources, let's say it's gold, for example, or whatever it is, coal, are owned by all of us. We as a state give leases to folks or give people the right to extract those minerals, but only under certain conditions. And those conditions mean that the funds that we, the severance taxes or the royalty taxes that are paid, go into the general fund. They do not go into the municipalities directly that are adjacent to those properties, other than property taxes that are imposed upon facilities in those areas, but not on the minerals or the resources that are there involved. And I guess my question is it, can the state of Alaska make those conditions either proactively or retroactively?
The state of Alaska has broad power in terms of determining the taxing power of municipalities. The state currently has a taxing structure that provides that municipalities can impose property taxes and sales and use taxes. The municipalities may have additional powers in addition to those that are expressly given in Title 29, but the parameters are constitutional. I think it is, the state does have some authority to determine what the municipal taxing powers are.
Now that kind of goes around my question, but I guess I'm not going to be satisfied until we get some kind of a constitutional answer to this, and probably not going to get there tonight, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Joel?
I don't know who could answer this, but does this in any way change the arrangements that boroughs may currently have with existing operations? And I'm sorry I was late. And I don't know if that was answered earlier. I know, you know, it's changing how a new mine comes in with potentially a new borough. But with an existing borough and an existing mining operation, does this in any way change that arrangement?
Who, anybody want to take that question?
Jim Pound, staff. For House Resources again. Future Representative Julie does not. There is language in there. If you give me a second, I'll look at it for you. I've looked at this so many times, I've lost everything. Section 3, page 2, line 16, primarily dealing with severance tax, which is the specific language we're using there. And I would gather you're referring to your district that
absolutely.
Where there is a severance tax, that language stays intact. That was a discussion we did have earlier as a one of the concerns that Representative Holm had.
Okay. Okay, Representative Schnell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Steve Van Zandt, are you still there?
Yes, I am, sir.
Yeah, Steve, I guess maybe I didn't ask my question. Maybe I never even got to the question, but 4%. One, I guess, does that sound like a reasonable amount to you? Two, how is that? That's where I was really trying to get to, I guess, is how is that 4% figure? Is it based on appraisals of what may be there, whether it be coal, gold, copper, whatever, zinc, or is it based on equipment? Is there a yearly appraisal type situation done, like on 4356 lands, where those lands are reappraised every so often to determine whether there's been an increase or a decrease in the value of those properties? And even though the mill rate doesn't go up or down because of the assessed value, the tax actually moves up or down based on that information?
Representative Stoltz, through the chair, are you referring to the 4 mil?
Yes, yes.
Oh, okay, just for clarification. The 4 mil basically is determined by the school contribution in Title 14, and that's what the 4 mil refers to. Now, that will change each year depending on the value of the mine, and the mine will be determined by cost. So, for example, in the Pogo mine south of Fairbanks, as of this year, they're only about half done. So that would be roughly a neighborhood of $125 million. When they're done, they expect to have $250 million invested in the project. Now, once the production commencement date starts, that amount can change. It can go up or down. Typically, like in the Red Dog mine, they've actually increased their investment, so that value would increase over time. And the 4 mil being stabilized, the tax dollars would actually increase as the investment increases. Where with 4356 property, they look at the value each year, and it's 20 mils times whatever the value is, and that changes, again, depending on how much they invest in the industry, and it does appreciate each year. Right now we're looking at the pipeline, there's an appeal on it this year. It is going down in value. If they don't invest new dollars in the mine, then in theory the value will go down each year. But what we've seen is they do reinvest money out there, so the value could go up, which means the tax dollars go up.
Okay, Steve, and Steve, this is Mike Chenault, this is not Bill Stoltz. I don't want him to get.
I'm sorry, sir. I'm on a cell phone. It's really hard to hear.
You're fine. I just don't want him to get a bad rap for some of the dumb questions I can ask. He does well on his own. Let me think. So the value, the 4 mil, is not based on the value of the extracted resource. It's based on the value of investment in the property.
Representative Chenault, through the chair, that's correct. It's the 4 mil is applied to the value, just like your mill rate in Kenai is applied to your house, and that would apply to the value. And if that value changes up or down, then the tax dollars would actually change on it.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Chenault. Okay. Let's see. We do have an amendment.
I have an amendment.
Is that your amendment, personally?
Yes.
Okay. You want to move it?
Yes, I move amendment number one.
Okay, so moved and objected to. Go ahead, Representative.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Pound will present amendment number one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Representative. Essentially, what we're looking at is on page 4, line 2, we're going to insert a new subsection having to do with property tax and how it is imposed by a municipality under Title 29 is in place, the tax levied under 4367. Therefore, that allows municipalities that are currently taxing under a different system to continue to tax under the same system. The second part of that is in the case of a municipality incorporated after January 1, 2005. Transition provisions, essentially when a new borough is formed, the state sort of works with the new borough government to, the borough government is in a position to take control and take care of their own business completely. It's about anywhere up to 2 years, depending on its transition clause, which is in AS 2905-140. That's the first part of it. Then we'll renumber accordingly. There was a question on page 5, line 20, which I believe was just essentially an oversight. The way the assessment and the objection, you have 20 days after you receive your assessment to object to it. The assessor has 30 days after that to come back with a decision one way or the other, and the way the next paragraph was written, you only had 30 days to actually file a formal appeal from the assessment date. So we were dealing with 50 days, we were already 20 days in the hole. And what we have changed that to is from an assessment date to a determination. So that determination comes from the assessor one way or the other, you then have 30 days to appeal that decision if necessary. Because of some of the modifications to the bill in HB in Resources Committee, we more involved the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development in this process. And so therefore we have added that department into where under the definition of department. And then the final one was, because of the same situation, we've added Commerce, Community, Economic Development into for the purposes of promulgation of regulations.
Okay. Person Schultz.
Oh man, some days I wish I was a bright guy.
We joined you sometimes.
And I'm sure most people in here wish I was too. assessment and determination. Is not a determination the next stage after an assessment?
Through the chair, there's not. What we have in the bill language is that you have 20 days to object to an assessment. The assessor has 30 days to respond either by modifying or denying that assessment. So we're 50 days out. When you go to the next paragraph, you can...
I understand. I got it.
Right.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure it followed the order I thought it should. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Okay.
Chair.
My objection.
One has been approved. Okay. Let me ask the sponsor here. Is there a Senate bill hanging on this?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, there is. It is Senate Bill 179.
And the status?
To be absolutely honest with you, I have not talked to the sponsor of this, Senator Terry.
Okay. I think before the committee members are comfortable with this out, we'd like to get something. Let's see. Kathy first?
Yes, sir.
Okay. There's still some concern and ambiguity of the constitutionality of what we're doing here, which concerns some of the committee members. Can you... Do you think clarify in writing the concerns that you heard both from Representative Holmes and Representative Stoltz today? Maybe have that by tomorrow?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
Tam Cook is working on that as we sit here.
Tam Cook is?
Yes.
Okay. is it your understanding we'll have something soon from him?
I would hope tomorrow.
Okay. All right. I think then let's hold this over. Hopefully we'll get those legal concerns. Kathy, if you could maybe check with Ben and make sure that we have those by tomorrow so we can take this bill back to that
room. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
All right, let's go to the Alaska House. House Bill 283. And then we'll take up Senate Bill 158. And that's probably the only one that we'll get to tonight. So if you're here for anything else besides 283 and 158, we'll have to do it tomorrow. Okay, go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Michael O'Hare, staff for Representative Pete Cott. And for you today is HB 283, an act relating to the compensation for board members of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. HB 283 would increase the board meeting compensation, the stipend, if you will, for public board members from the current levels of $100 to $400 per board meeting. This current per board meeting compensation level of $100 has been in place since the inception of the corporation in 1971. The AHFC board is asked to consider a few topics having to do with bonding, the mortgage industry, public housing, and many other complex technical financial matters. Board members, HFC board members, do not draw a salary. They are tasked to consider and approve bond programs valued anywhere from $600 million to $1 billion. They have, as I understand, in the past 15 years given back somewhere in the neighborhood of $1.4 billion to the state general fund. Considering issues of such magnitude requires HFC to do whatever is necessary to have the most capable people on the board, and this bill will allow HFC to keep them there. This stipend is only applicable to the four members, the public members of AHFC's seven-member board of directors. It's estimated the increase, this increase would cost the corporation about $20,000. I think you have a fiscal note on this, in corporate receipts per fiscal year. The sponsor respectfully requests your support for HB 283 and swift passage through committee. That concludes my introduction, Mr. Chairman. I have Mr. Brian Bucci here from AHFC to answer any questions, as well as the Chief Executive Officer, Dan Fausti, on the line, sir.
Okay, very good. Yes, I see Dan's online. Any questions for Mr. O'Hare?
Mr. Brian Bucci?
Yes.
I might make an observation in addition to the comments made by Mr. O'Hare. Despite how we may agree or disagree on the positions of the bill that we moved through this committee on the pension plan, the new pension board, we've also recommended a some level of compensation be $400 a day for non-government members. So this is kind of think part of bringing our day rates for these activities consistent and appropriate in the 21st century.
Okay, very good. Mr. Stoltz?
Yeah, thanks. Mr. Butcher was here a lot of years. I was here as an interim staff. The $400 from the permanent fund sort of stood out as a recognizing the value of that board. It was more of the caliber of people. It was more of an honorarium that really meant to get compensation. Most of the people on there. At least that's how it was presented. It probably wasn't more than a couple billion dollars or so, but when the corporation with the trustees went with, I suspect Mike, President Hawker, just informed me that the size of the assets was in excess of $1 billion, so we're talking about a pretty major corporation here, so I guess that's my editorial support thing for this.
Okay, very good.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Brian Butcher, Governmental Relations and Public Affairs Director for the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. In addition to the permanent fund, the Alaska Railroad also receives $400 a day. And just a reminder, as I'm sure you all know, AHFC is self-supporting. This would be AHFC corporate receipts and would not affect the general fund.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much, Mr. Ripson Hawker.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move from committee CS for House Bill number 283, State Affairs, with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note.
Any objections? Seeing none?
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Dan Fauske, I'd like to thank you and the members of the committee very much.
You're welcome, Dan. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay, Senator Evans. What are you doing to us here, sir? Municipal tax on state construction contracts. Okay. You can, for the record, tell us who you are and.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Charlie Huggins, home in Wasilla, represent rural Matsu in the famous community of Chugiak, along with Bill Stoltz. One piece of levity, I see I'm still not going to strike up that conversation with Carl Moses.
Yeah,
working on
Which bill,
I'm sorry?
He might come back for you.
Yeah, I'm sure he's listening in on TV. Mr. Chair, if I might, Senate Bill 158 essentially looks to maintain a tradition that's been present since statehood, over 40 years, and that is that in doing and practicing business, when it was state contracts, there was sovereign immunity as far as taxes when we went to places to do good, to create new things and enhance communities. Unfortunately, about two plus years ago, we stumbled across a community, and let's just imagine for a moment it was in Palmer, Alaska. And it was a $400,000 subcontract by an electrical contractor that, as they started to transition out of town for the first time in the state's history, they were handed a bill for a tax, a sales tax, on the total of their contract, $400,000. So as they walked out of town, and there was, you know, obviously some degree of startlement on their part, and then, of course, insistence on the part, in this case, let's call it Palmer, that said, you owe us money. Well, by the time it was all over with, they paid $21,900 off their contract for a levy on the gross of the contract. Now, when this was first brought to my attention, you say, well, Huggins, what do you do with this? Well, it happened to be a transportation-type contract. And when I heard about it, you know, I thought to myself, you know, that's strange. That doesn't seem right. And I just kind of sat on it for a matter of weeks, actually a little bit over a month. But I was traveling back between here and Chugiak, Wasilla area, and talking to people in the airports. And I just kind of talked through the scenario with average Alaskans. And to the person, without hesitation, they just said, you know, that's not right. And it's not right. So by virtue of that, my concern is simple. If this practice is not addressed by us here in the legislature, essentially what we will face is a shrinking of the dollars that are available in the state to do contracting. We might as well go ahead and carve out X amount as far as our planning figures. And for your information, I think you know this, but just as a refresher, on average, we do about 350 to about 450. Oh, Carl, thank you very much. That was weird. I wasn't going to talk to you.
He said he wanted to have dialogue.
Yeah. Let the record show that Carl and I are going to have. Carl, I was proud to be here before you today. We were just saying, as I mentioned to you the other day, it's certainly a pleasure. You know, one of the things, I just regress for a moment. Yeah, I can just imagine a young 13-year-old man back in the 40s and what you did for our country.
What's the heck got to do with municipal tax? I'm
trying to get you to vote for this bill. Anyway.
You got it.
Did I get more words out of Carl Moses than you heard all day?
I told you we could.
That is a record.
Thank you.
Mr. Moses, do you have a question for Secretary?
Yeah, Mr. Charlie Rupp.
Yes, sir.
Why shouldn't the municipalities be able to charge taxes two or three times?
Well, number one.
He wasn't here.
Number one, through the chair, is. I would rest that most of us are traditionalists, and for over 40 years, the tradition and the practice in our state was you don't do that on state contracts. Now, if you come to Wasilla or Palmer and you want to stay in a motel, you pay the tax if you're there as a contract. If you rent a car, you pay the tax. If you go to the dump, you pay the tax. If you get stopped by the police, you get a speed ticket. All those normal kinds of things. But on the gross of your contract, as a state contractor subcontractor, 158 makes it the immunity of no taxes on that contract. On that, if you buy things in that town to be able to do part of your project, it's subject to taxes. But pretty simple. I can tell you that as we look around, in that case, before this case was over with, because there were some change orders on the contract, in fact, DOT paid the taxes. So the practice has started. Doing that was only several hundred dollars, but before that organization got out of town, the DOT was paying the taxes, because in change orders, they just figured out what the amount would be on the tax of the change order. They tacked that amount on it, and DOT paid the extra amount. So you do the math, $350 to $450 million around the state, what that will cost you if you tack on a 4 to 5% tax on it. It will carve out a significant amount. Said another way, and by way of thanking for a guy who lives in Meadow Lakes, somebody comes in my community, going to do about $8 million worth of work. And I'd say, thank you very much, but I need another $20,000 out of it. And I'd say, there's something wrong with that. And I would just ask you to think of it in that perspective. It's the way we've always done business, and we preserve that, I think, as Alaskans in tradition. We remind ourselves all the times of our tradition, and let's not break that tradition.
Call up Representative Moses. Representative Stoltz.
Well, thank you. I appreciate this bill before. I've heard worse, though. Back in the early 90s, we used to send over barges of grain and stuff to Somalia, and they charge us wharfage fees. But that's not a parallel. It's just there are worse jurisdictions. But not many.
Yeah, this is not asking to change anything. It's just maintaining status quo. And I think that's fair enough. And you know, quite frankly, think of it as a business person. When you go someplace, I can tell you that the organization to pay this tax, when they bid on the contract, this practice was not in place. I can also tell you there's at least one, potentially two other places that have started to impose the same tax. The commonality that those three communities have is they have the same legal firm. They're being advised on a business strategy to get some of that money out of the contract. And I say to you, that will spread like wildfire. That will disappoint me because we have a chance before we create bad habits on our part. We can just kill it in the embryonic stages, and we're all better off, and we will continue to put full force of our contracting ability to enhance Alaska and its communities.
Silver Hunt,
because
I let you talk that much on the other side.
Well, that's why I'm talking so much here.
Representative Stoltz.
No, I'm
done. Okay, good. On teleconference, we have. Is there any other questions? On teleconference, we have Steve Boyd with the National Electrical Contractors Association, D.C. Are you on, Steve?
Yes, I am.
Did you have questions or did you want to give testimony, Steve?
Well, I wouldn't mind giving just some brief testimony.
Sure.
For the record, my name is Steve Boyd. I'm the manager of the Alaska chapter of the National Electrical Contractors Association. And I'd like to thank the chairman and committee for giving me this opportunity to speak before you today. I am calling in from Washington, D.C. I don't live here. I live in Anchorage. Our organization we have 30 members of our organization are electrical contractors, and we represent approximately another 40 contributing employers, most of whom are small business owners. We feel that the scope of state projects logically links the subcontractors to the general contractor, and therefore subcontract values should be exempt from local taxes. Bids on projects are generally solicited from general contractors for a total product, including subcontractor work and the coordination of their work thereof. Subcontractors can therefore only work for the state, in most cases, via this conduit established by the state and the general contractor, in language that binds the subcontractor to the state, much like the general contractor is bound to the state. To cut my remarks short a little bit, as an industry association, it's our goal to create a consistent and equitable practice statewide so everyone knows the rules. This is why we're here, or why I'm speaking to you today, after evaluating the steps the contractor took in seeking relief. We feel clarification of the statute would be in the best interest of the state and our industry. Thank you very much again for this opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Boyd. Next, we'll move on to David Lance, President of Diamond Electric. Are you with us?
I am here. And basically, I'm available for any questions. We were a contractor that was affected by a tax, and it hit us pretty hard. And if anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you. Next, we have the lovely mayor from Nome. Denise Michaels, are you with us, Denise?
Mr. Chair and committee members, I appreciate this time. Before you, I hope you have my three-page testimony.
If we don't, I'm sure we will get it. Yes, we do. Yes, we do have it.
I won't go line by line. I'll just hit on the high points to save time for you. My name is Michaels, Mayor of Nome, for the record, and the City of Nome opposes Senate Bill 158. We feel that this diminishes our existing statutory authority of local governments to raise needed revenues through levying taxes. The City of Nome basically receives most of our revenues through sales tax and property tax. The property tax, 40% of it is exempt by state statute. The community feels that a sales tax meets the needs and it's fair. When a contractor comes into the community, they use our municipality services every day. We feel that, you know, we're sorry what happened to Diamond Electric, but in the state RFP, it also mentions that a contractor is responsible to do their due diligence to see what taxes or permits or fees are required to do construction in the community. Just the second page kind of gives you an overview. The City of Nome is doing what it can to make sure we meet the needs of operating our government. Our budget's about $8 million. We received $3 million from property, our sales tax, $2 million from property tax. And by this Senate bill will cut more revenues that we feel that we are allowed to assess. The state, we're very lucky to receive maybe one project every 3 to 5 years, and so it varies from time to time on how much revenue we receive on taxing subcontractors. But we feel this helps us. It helps pay for municipal operations. I'm here if you have any questions.
Thank you, Denise. Are there any questions? Seeing none, we have with us Kevin Ritchie. I haven't seen Dick Chattanooga yet, but I see Kevin here. So, Kevin, if you want to testify.
Kevin Ritchie with the Alaska Municipal League, and I'll keep this brief since I know you're tired today. You've got a letter from us in your packet. AML opposes the bill for the following three major reasons. One is that municipalities more than ever have to tax to survive, and the smaller the community, the more important it is to use the tax streams that are available, because those diminish as the size of the community goes down. Over the past 10 years, municipalities so far have lost revenue sharing, safe communities, money, capital matching grants, reimbursement for senior citizen property taxes, exception, etc. And that the City of Nome using its legal authority to generate taxes is really the message that it's been given as far as finding ways to be able to pay for operations. The second issue is that the issue before you is not an issue really between contractors and the cities, but it's between, at this point, the municipalities, and many municipalities in the state. The contractors at this point, I think it'd be very safe to say, are aware of this tax policy. So this becomes a cost of the contract, not a cost that's borne out of the profits of the contractor. The Municipal League would certainly help the state in identifying communities that that levy sales tax on subcontractors if that would be of help. But in any event, this should not be coming out of the profits of the contractor or the subcontractor, but out of the basic overall grant from the state or the feds. The third issue is that it's been said that if a sales tax is charged on a small portion of the contract, that will diminish the value of the improvement that's being made in the community. Well, the bottom line is that the impacts are local. If, for example, an airport project isn't as good as it could be because $10,000, $20,000 is paid in taxes locally, that could be used to make that improvement to the airport, the recipient of that benefit from the airport is going to be the people locally. So again, this should be a local decision that if the people of Nome feel that they're not getting the projects that they should or getting the value out of the projects they should, really it's a Nome issue, as it would be with any community. So again, the local control aspect of this, I think, is important. Anyway, those are my remarks, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
We do have a couple questions, Mr. Ritchie. Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Ritchie, have you ever bid a contract?
No, sir.
Well, let me give you a little bit of, I've bid many of them, hundreds of them. And one of the things that we do when you bid a contract is you take your costs and you mark them up. Okay? So when you say that the sales tax will only diminish the value based upon the amount of money that you're taxing by the value of that contract, that's not true. It's also the amount that's marked that percentage of the contract is marked up. So I want you to think about that. The other thing is I'm curious as to why the municipal league would think it be appropriate for tax dollars to be taxed. Let me tell you why I'm saying that. If we take general fund dollars, and I think we have something that says you can't do that in our constitution, but that's a different aside. We take tax dollars, and we give you tax dollars. We've taken them away from all the other people in the state of Alaska, and we give them to you to provide a project in a city or in a state, you know, in any area. Why would it make any sense to tax that tax dollar so that you would remove the value of that project? Like when you come to us in the state of Alaska and you say, I've got a project worth $20 million or whatever the project's worth, you don't say it's $20 million plus the 3% tax we're going to put on to it. You say it's just worth $20 million. So we assume that if we're going to give you $20 million worth of work to build a project, then we're going to get value for the money we're giving you as tax dollars from the general fund. I find that to be very curious that you would defend that kind of practice, and so I'd like your comments.
Through the chair, well, two issues. I think just taking one case in point is that I think that in most cases, or many cases, federal money would come into play, so it's not necessarily state dollars. For an FAA, yeah.
But it's federal dollars. I mean, it's your left pocket, not your right pocket. Right. So, okay.
And it really goes back to what Mayor Michaels said, is that communities are struggling to find ways to legally and appropriately pay for the operations and services that they provide, whether it be police, fire, streets, and so on. And all of those are paid for with tax dollars, local tax dollars, tax dollars on contracts in this particular case. So it's a struggle. And the smaller the community, what we're finding is more constricted the tax base, and the more important it is for many the small communities especially to take advantage of, and I'm not saying that a lot of communities will, really at this point very few communities do, considering, but they're all very small communities that, as Mayor Mike said, don't see a state stream of projects. But again, everything that really runs the municipality is pretty much tax dollars.
Just one follow up, just this sure. Kind of comment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I probably have to agree to disagree with you on the idea, but remember, we're not only talking about little municipalities, we're also talking about the city of Anchorage and the city of Fairbanks and any other city that says, look, we're going to get $20 or $30 or $50 million worth of projects in here. Why don't we just slap a tax on those projects, whatever tax it is, and use that money in some other place? It's not fair to come to the state of Alaska and say, we want money appropriated for a particular project and then use it for something else. I guess that's my comment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. If Representative Holman hadn't asked Mr. Ritchie if he ever bid a contract, I would have already known that, because he referred to the profits just so nonchalantly. I guess he never bid a contract and only taxing the profits. I think some of the contractors wouldn't have had a problem with that. It would have been
in many cases. And that's, I guess that sort of reflects the mentality and the philosophy that really framed where I saw where you guys were coming from. I guess I'd never cease to be amazed by Panhandle position statement. But leave it at that.
Mr. I apologize for referring to profits. What I meant was either profits or the money that the contractor would take out for their business. But what I meant was that it wouldn't really, if this tax were known, I mean, various tax structures exist throughout the state. When those are known by DOT, they make their contractors aware of them and consider that, I think, in the bid process.
I think he's done a good job of illustrating the contractor's points to improve. Right. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Mr. Itzi.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Oh, do you have a question?
Just one.
Kevin Itzi, I think there's one more question.
Oh, excuse me. I didn't know you bailed there.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I didn't know you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the letter that we received on April 26th from Kathy Wasserman, the one I think that you referred to. Just help me out. That last full paragraph that on the second page that begins with the bill summary states that the bill's intention. Mm-hmm. Would you just read that and tell me if there's an internal inconsistency there that I'm missing or am I misunderstanding?
Mr. Chairman,
let me help you out. It appears as if you're saying we've never done exactly what it is that Senator Huggins' bill is trying to make sure that you don't do.
Through the chair, I think what this paragraph is talking about is that no community taxes the full contract. So, for example, if there were a $7 million airport project, as I understand it, contracted by the state, that cannot legally be taxed. But this would be referring to subcontracts awarded in connection with the project, so not the general contract, but the subcontract.
Okay, that's where I see the problem. It says the bill summary states the bill's intention is to prohibit the imposition of municipal sales tax and use tax on a construction contract awarded by the state, or on a subcontract awarded in connection with the project. Then you say, your league says, this is misleading as no communities impose a sales or use tax on a construction contract awarded by the state. And you go on to say this issue is only about subcontract workers that have been hired by the contractor. It seems in the sentence just above that you said that you don't do it. It says you do not do this thing on a construction contract awarded by the state or a state agency or on a subcontract. So in one spot it says we never do this thing, and then it goes on to say we only do this thing. Am I reading? That's why I'm having trouble figuring out exactly where we're going.
Go ahead.
Yep. Yeah, real quickly, through the chair, I think that, again, that may be what Representative Stoltz identified as not understanding the contract language correctly, but as I understand it, what this, I believe, is intended to mean is simply that communities can't impose a sales tax on the general contract, but can on subcontracts awarded subsequently, not by the state, but by the general contractor.
Okay, so this is misstated.
I'm sorry, I don't know if it's misstated or not, but I think that's the intent. I mean, in terms of the reading, you may quite well be right. Sorry.
I'm sorry, I'm just trying to figure out where you come from, because it appears to say that we don't ever do it. And then, as I understand the example here that we're trying to fix, it has been done. And I just have a problem. You would get the sales tax from the bed rentals and the grub that's purchased for lunches and all those things that normally go on. It seems to be zipping and not a good practice for us to do this. So I don't disagree with you often, Kevin, but I have a problem with this one.
No, very good. It's okay to disagree. All right, thank you, Kevin Ritchie. Okay, the only other person to testify was Dick Katnov with the Civi Sports Society. So you got to represent?
Oops. My name's Thaya Shah. I represent the Associate General Contractors as a lobbyist. Dick is down testifying on the workers' comp bill, and he apologizes for not being able to be here. AGC is very interested in seeing the passage of this bill. Business likes to know what the rules are and have them applied consistently, and we'd very much like to have your policy call on this and support Senate Bill 158.
Very good. Thank you. Question, Representative Stokes?
I don't have my calculator, but, you know, if the Matsu Anchorage wanted to skim a nickel off every buck on the garbage bucket full through, nothing.
Well, that was the second reason for not coming here. He's a little afraid from his track record last week. He wasn't sure.
How many million?
Okay. Any questions for the sponsor? You have a question, Representative Kelly?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and hopefully for the sponsor, Senator Huggins. I got to say just about the time I've gotten to know you in this body, I particularly appreciate your common sense and plain talk. And it's one of those cases. It's just really a pleasure doing the people business with you. So to that, I'd very much like to move Senate Bill number 158 from committee with the attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Just object for...
Sure, go ahead.
Then I'll lift my objections. We can expect probably to see more stuff like this if we don't deal with municipalities. You know, we've got 10 that have folded. 25 are on the books to fold for next year. What are we doing here to our communities? When we tell them on one hand, here's some tools you got to work with, except now we're going to take some of these tools away from you. This is baloney. And, you know, the bigger issue here isn't this bill. It's how we're not treating or sharing the wealth with our communities. And doggone it, we need to deal with that issue, and I lift my objection.
Well, take it. Okay, there's no objection to moving the bill out of committee, but the bill passed. Passes the committee. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Carl. You're welcome.
You just made Senator Reagan.
just to follow up on the point, I know this bill is done. But boy, let me tell you, when all we got of the tribes is left, we're going to have a fight on our hands, people. We're going to have an ugly fight on our hands. This makes no sense. To deprive our communities of the wealth that this great state gets.
Okay, sounds like a plug for revenue sharing or
municipal assistance.
Yeah.
Good point.
Thank you.
Municipal
thank you, Carl. Okay, let's see what we're doing here. Tomorrow, we're going to have to meet tomorrow morning. Don't leave yet. Ms. Cunningham, please. We need to sign the sheet. Just everybody stay around for a second, two. Okay, what I'd like to do before we conclude tonight is take up a bill previously heard, Senate Bill 155. I think you should have that in front of you. What I'd like to do with this is Ms. Cunningham's going to explain the CS. It should be real close to what we had the last time we spoke on this bill. The intent here would be to move this to rules and not have it go to floor anytime soon. In fact, we could actually get this back. What the speaker wishes. But probably the biggest change to this would be, and I don't want to steal this Cunningham stuff, but it's that we're changing the fund source from permanent funders to general fund, which is line 12 on the first page. But Ms. Cunningham, please go through the changes first.
Thank you. For the record, Suzanne Cunningham, staff to co-chairman Meyer. As the chairman said, the first fundamental change is the funding source, change from permanent fund earnings to the general fund. The second major change can
like
be...
What, please?
All of the funding sources.
All of them?
All of the funding sources.
They're all in the general fund.
They're all general fund.
Thanks.
The second change can... Substantial change can be found in Section 3 of the bill. The numbers that were passed over in the original version of the bill were just a little bit higher than as they appear in the CS. And the primary reason is for that. The two funds that this money is appropriated to has a condition on it, and that is that there's a local match that needs to be provided for grants that are appropriated. So these projects that were in here at full funding, we reduced down to either a 70-30 split, or for the two schools that are REAAs, a 2%. And that worked out to a reduction in the projects that were in the previous CS of $19,447,972.
That's the reduction amount?
That was the reduction amount.
$19 million. How much?
$447,972.
Thank you.
And then some projects.
Okay. Sure. Go ahead.
Is that the capital matching grants formula, not the school debt reimbursement formula?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
The second part of Section 2, we added some projects in there.
Section 2?
I'm sorry, Section 3. We added about $57 million worth of projects under Section 2. Section 3. Just repeating what the co-chairman says. Under Section 5 of the bill, we did add $10 million to the University of Alaska for the University of Alaska Fairbanks Fisheries and Ocean Science Facility at Lena Point. And under Section 6, we amended the amount of $5 million for the Anchorage Museum of History and Art to $15 million. And that's the substantive changes.
Questions?
Refuge Stoltz. I assume this is going to require a title change.
Through the chair, Representative Stoltz, it does require a title change, and Legislative Legal Services did issue a title change resolution.
Thank you. Would you like to adopt the CS?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry, please.
Mr. Chairman, move as a looking draft House CS for Senate Bill Number 155, Version 24-LS0687. /U-Unicorn version, Kurtz 5405.
Thank you, Representative Hockner.
You object? Just because I object, yeah.
Just because you're that way?
Yep.
Okay. You want to speak to your objection?
Yeah, I know we're going to have time to analyze it, but not tonight. So I guess I don't think we should move this. I think we have a chance to look at it. I look at a couple of things on this, and I don't like what I see, so obviously at first blush, you know, I think it'd be appropriate that we have a chance to do a little digestion this evening with this, and we moved it out to rules. So that's just my thoughts.
I might offer, sir.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Rick.
Appreciate the concern over moving the bills. We've also got to consider the clock on the clubhouse wall here. Our need to be able to be in position to work as session end comes to a close. I know, since having worked on this committee for a few years, I'm particularly appreciative of the time frames. And it's one of those times I think we really do need to get this before us rather than delay the effort.
Any other comments? Take it brief at ease.
No, that's fine. I'll remove my
hand. No, take that brief at ease.
I'll take it brief. Welcome back to order.
Okay, Ms. Cunningham, could you again explain the changes that were made to Senate Bill 155? I know some of the members here had turned in amendments. Some amendments were incorporated somewhere, and I know you're trying to get a balance. I know you're trying to keep the amount this low. I think your intent here was to keep it under $400 million in hopes of if we went to, for example, CPR, I think the governor at one time said that he would accept up to a $400 million CPR. We're not using CPR. The funds source here is general funds. But maybe, I don't want to put words in your mouth. Go ahead, Ms. Cunningham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In looking at SB 155, the two largest elements of it were Section 2, which was the major maintenance list, which is not listed out in full in this legislation, and then also Section 3, which is the new construction section. The major maintenance list that is established by the Department of Education and Early Development is pretty substantial. There is a lot on it. And so in looking at amendments to this bill, you know, we weighed heavily what was included in the major maintenance list with also requests for new construction and tried to equal out the projects that were awarded to each district.
Okay, very good.
And maybe awarded was the wrong term.
Representative Holman, do you still object to working on off this CS?
No, that's fine.
You may be objection. Okay, so we do have the CS as moved by Representative Hawker before us. Any other questions, comments?
If I might, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, go ahead.
I guess obviously throughout this draft, the Kirby's version was a earnings reserve funding. I personally much prefer the earnings reserve funding than the general funding, but I also can count votes and know that I do not have the votes on this committee to get there. So with that, I will just state my preference.
And you'll save us the time and the vote. Thank you, Representative Hawker. Okay, if there's no objections to SB 155, moving out of committee.
It wasn't a motion made to move it out.
Sorry.
To move it out, sir.
Okay, rips it off. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move from committee House CS for CS for Senate Bill number 155 as amended with individual recommendations, and I'm sure there is a dismissal somewhere.
Actually, because it's an appropriations bill, there is no fiscal note.
No fiscal note. So okay. Fiscal note, as amended.
Very good. Any objections to this moving tool? Seeing none, SP 155 moves out of five. Okay, before everybody leaves, we are going to adjourn here. We do need to take up, or will take up, tomorrow morning at 8:30. Hopefully you'll have the legal answers to House Bill 280. Oh, I'm sorry. We're going to recess at 8:30. Don't let me adjourn. Okay, we're going to recess to 8:30 tomorrow. House Bill 280, if we have the answers, which was the minerals tax payments. House Bill 243, there's a new CS that came in late. That had to do with the regulatory cost charges for utilities and pipelines. Senate Bill 110, if we have time, and I don't know. We got some other bills here. Pending referral, but that'll be in the afternoon.
Before you get lost, sir, I'd like an opportunity.
Okay, we'll give you that. It looks like tomorrow afternoon is going to be busy. Pending referral, we'll have the workers' comp, which is going to be a big bill. I don't know if we'll get that or not. But anyway, tomorrow will be a busy day for us, and so let's plan on coming back or recess at 8:30, but Representative Hawker?
Mr. Chairman, if I could just ask the committee to reconsider potentially moving Senator House Bill 280 up this evening. Again, we're looking at some pretty short time frames and horizons, and while I recognize there's questions asked members of the committee for further legal research, I think we have some pretty good preliminary indications from legal counsel, and clearly all we're going to be moving this first two rules, and then there'll be an opportunity before it reaches the floor should there be any significant legal dilemma identified. If it is your wishes and with the concurrence of the committee, I'd really like to see this one moved out.
I'd like to object. I have an amendment to put on the bill.
Okay.
that I'd like to have some comment from Mr. Pound before we do that. So if you'd like to do it first thing in the morning, we'd be fine.
Yeah, Erson and Hawker, if we do this in the morning, we're not losing any time because it'll still get right across at 10 o'clock. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I agree with you. I would have liked to move the bill. We did have some pending questions, and I think until we're completely comfortable with the bill, we should move it on. So, anything else coming forward?
8:30 tomorrow.
I'm sorry?
8:30.
Yes, 8:30 tomorrow. There's nothing else coming for the committee? We'll recess until 8:30.